Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay and I am going to be the host for the presentation today, and I reside in the Chicago area. Today is Sunday, June 30th, 2024. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, June 28th. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,529. That's 21529. For the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 21,530. That's 21530. This morning, A Vision for You presents Step 12, The Jewel in the Crown. Our speaker this morning will talk a bit about Step 12 and all that Step 12 encompasses, and she's going to actively, actively living in Step 12 and how that keeps her implementing all the steps through all aspects of her life. You know, the sequencing of the steps are important. In other words, the arrangement, the order of the steps, and also the manner in which we progress through them is really, I've come to realize, is very critical. And the big book certainly supports that. And that being the case, again, confirmed again and again in the big book, somewhere along the way, I got the shorthand for the sequence of the steps, and it could be described in the following way. You know, steps 1, 2, and 3 get me right with my higher power. Steps 4 through 7 get me right with myself. Steps 8 and 9 get me right with others. And steps 10, 11, and 12 keep me right with my higher power, with me, and with you. And that was very helpful. It's really that simple. How do I get right with power of my own understanding? How do I get right with myself? And how do I get right with others? And then how do I stay there? And why is the complication of the program detrimental? Well, I'll tell you my experience. When we complicate something designed to be simple, our co-founders and pioneers designed something to be extraordinarily simple and organic, like breathing. I'm not saying easy, but certainly simple. And when we complicate that, it leads to confusion and it leads to inefficiency. And the deadliest thing of all that it leads to for a compulsive overeater is delay. Delay for me is deadly. You know, when I completed the first 11 steps, one of the things I recall saying to my sponsor at that particular time was that, you know, I'm really afraid to work with another person. I'm scared that I'll inevitably hurt them. After all, I'm so new to this transformation. I don't have the length of time you do. I don't know enough. And honestly, to be frank, I'm not even convinced that this is going to stick with me. How in the world am I going to convince someone else that a spiritual transformation is the answer? Well, you can see right there, I misunderstood that I was trying to convince someone of something, right? And wouldn't it make more sense, I said to that sponsor, wouldn't it make more sense to sort of settle in, a bit to this new way of life? In fact, I'm thinking perhaps a few months of seasoning, marinating more in this stuff. Don't you think that would be better? And he said, Larry, you can't hurt them. He said, do you understand that they're going to die from this untreated disease anyhow? That there's no way you're going to hurt them any more than they're already hurting themselves. And then he shared something ridiculously simple, but very profound, like most simple things. He said, has it occurred to you, Larry, that by carrying this message to another, you might just be helping yourself? And it was then that I slowly began to comprehend that spiritual recovery is ultimately sustained when we transmit the message rather than just receive the message. And maybe those folks were right, the ones that talked about it's better to give than to receive. And, metaphorically speaking, we're like a candle that, sort of lights up other candles before brightening its own flame, or maybe a tree, a fruit-bearing tree that bears fruit for others to enjoy before nurturing itself. See, generosity begets generosity. And when I give generously to others, yes, sometimes we can inspire them. God works through us, our higher power, to inspire them to do the same thing. And it creates a cycle of compassion. And that inevitably flows back to me. Now, as I wrap and pass it on to our speaker, a wonderful speaker, one of my favorite examples of this is Dr. Bob. You know, Dr. Bob Smith, as you know, he was one of our co-founders, pioneers. He was born in, 1879 in Vermont. He got sober around June 1935. He was maybe 55, 56 years of age, something like that. And he passed away on November 16th, 1950 in Akron. But none of that really matters, all the, you know, the history of this stuff. This man died in the way that I hope to die someday. Sober, abstinent. And what can I learn from him? You know, after recovering from alcoholism, Dr. Bob dedicated his life to helping others. He continued, you know, his medical practice in Akron. But the main thing is he became a mentor and a sponsor to many individuals. And he didn't even view himself as a sponsor, per se. He practiced these principles. It kept him on the beam of recovery. And he gave this away to many other people, those that wanted it, that wanted to be free. He gave it to them. And the guy practiced these principles. He didn't just take a role in shaping the principles of the program. He practiced them. Regardless, in the midst of calamity or joy, which leads me to segue to someone else in our history who sought to do the same, whether through storms or sunshine. We're all part of the history. Joining us this morning to share her experience and wisdom about step 12 is Nancy P. from Massachusetts. And Nancy is a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous. You'll hear her on Vision for You. You can find her. She's not hard to find. She's not hidden. And she's committed to the practice and teaching of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So with gratitude, please join me in welcoming Nancy P. to the line. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Larry. Short segue, your short history of AA and OA. My name is Nancy P. I'm recovered. I live in West Newton, Massachusetts, and I'm delighted to be here. When Leah asked me to speak, she said she asked that I talk about one of the steps specifically. And I said, I'm an agnostic. Everybody knows I'm an agnostic. And I love that, you know, to the agnostic. I love that chapter. And she said, well, we just had someone. And I said, oh, you know, and then what about step 9? And it's just so important. And what about step 1? And it's just, they're all just so important. And then I realized, like, I say this on the line all the time, step 12 really is the jewel in the crown. I really believe my lived experience, the data shows me that step 12, everything that I did up to that point was to prepare me to do step 12. If you had said to me, I mean, I've been in this program since 1971. So in 1971, they used to have these big posters with this 12 steps and 12 traditions so that you could read them like they were there, big, like window shades, like big giant roll-up things, and they'd hang them up. And, you know, you'd read them, and I could practically say them in my sleep because I've been to a lot of meetings since then. But as I got older, I thought, step 12, you know, that just means going to prisons and talking to people, because I went to a lot of AA meetings too, and they had these sort of groups that went to prisons, and they'd have, you know, you'd go in and they'd take all your cell phone, anything, couldn't wear certain clothes because they might rip them off and strangle somebody or something like that. And I just thought, you know, who's interested in that? And then when I started to go to Big Book, I thought, oh, okay, you know, well, maybe I'll try to get a group together to go someplace where there's a lot of people that need help and we can all, like, bestow our knowledge. And you know, I sort of whittled it down. And over those years, my weight had gone up and it had gone down and it had gone up and it had gone down. And, you know, I was an active or present, I wouldn't say active, I was a present member of Overeaters Anonymous for 47 years before I recovered. And for the past 6 years, and actually it'll be 7 months tomorrow, I have been a recovered woman. And so what I learned in that is that the 12th step is the thing that knits it all together. Step one knits the whole process together to make it an eternal circle. And it starts to talk about step 12 on the first page of the doctor's opinion, where it says, let me get to the first page here. In due course of his third treatment, they're talking about Bill, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present these conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. There it is, right there. So the importance of step 12 is throughout the book. And when I began my final journey to recovery, you know, my sponsor pointed that out to me, and I pointed out to all my sponsees too, you know, to remember that abstinence is basically the least of the gifts that I've been given. My weight has not fluctuated in 6.5 years at all, a pound or two here and there if I go on vacation or if I'm, you know, if I eat out, something like that. But my weight has not fluctuated, but my personality has gone through a profound change. In the beginning, I thought I didn't need to change anything else. If I could just be thin, then I would be happy. Well, anybody who's lost weight and then gained it back knows that that's not true. My question to myself was, you know, I'm abstinent. Why am I still so angry? It wasn't like, why am I still so desperate? No, only why am I still so angry? I was just so angry all the time, and I couldn't get away from it. It reminds me of when my son was tiny. And I took him to the doctor, something was, I don't know, he had a cough or something. And she said, I don't know what's wrong. And I said, what do you mean? I gave you my copay, fix my kid. You know, like I expected an even equation. And in fact, she couldn't do that as a doctor, but the steps are pretty even. If I put into it enough, then I get out of it exactly what I put into it. Whatever I put into it is what I get out of it. And when I put nothing into it except weighing and measuring my food, I got nothing. And, you know, as I progressed through the steps with my sponsor, she told me, you know, she took me through. And I will say this, she wasn't my friend, she isn't my friend, and we'll probably never be friends. We're very different. I don't even know if she comes to the meetings anymore, but she was an excellent, excellent sponsor, and she knew the book inside out. And she doesn't have to be my friend to be helpful. And that is key. Because in my opinion, it's easy to say, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, step 12 is its own ecosystem. Just the same way that, you know, steps 1 through 3 are the conclusion steps, steps 4 through 9 are the process steps, the skill set, and then 10, 11, and 12, you know, that's where we try to live. I think step 12 has three parts too. First, we have a spiritual awakening. That's the first thing that happens, but it's dead. It's like a planet without a star. Without a star, all planets just turn into rocks floating in space. So the second thing is we carry the message. And the third thing is we practice the principles in all our affairs, whether we want to or not. And that was key for me. And I, you know, I've had a lot of ups and downs in the program. I've had a lot of, you know, difficult things happen to me. Even when I was recovered, you know, I lost a job that was, that was a great job, and I worked for a great guy, and my boss, he also lost his job eventually, but, you know, we both got booted from the company, and that was hard and scary and nerve-wracking and made me feel terrible. My daughter, many people know that my daughter was consumed with self-harm. She was cutting and burning herself. And that was really hard and really hard. That was probably the hardest thing. And that just wouldn't stop no matter what I did. And that's when I recovered. But I recovered and I was like, well, how come she's still hacking herself up with a razor blade and burning herself to a crisp? I'm recovered. It should, like, we all should be on the yellow brick road. And it wasn't. She didn't care what I thought or how I felt. She might have, but she was in her own prison and couldn't react or, you know, be really an active member of the family. And so I had to schlep her around to the therapists and to the, you know, all the mechanisms that we had in place to help her. I'm happy to say today she's graduated from college. She has a boyfriend, is in a great relationship, and actually speak right now, she's getting her scuba diving license in Gloucester in the ocean. She's really excited about that. So she got better. And, you know, but that didn't happen when I thought it should happen. And, you know, I didn't know how to love her. All I could do was take her around and do what I could do when I recovered. And that was hard. And, you know, another thing is one time I had this sponsee who kept lying to me. And I was so sick of it. And I called someone else who had great recovery and I said, I hate this sponsee. She keeps lying to me and I'm sick of it. And the woman said, well, what step are you on with it? And I said, one. And she said, well, she doesn't know how to tell the truth yet. So you can't really dump her if she's, you know, if she doesn't know how. And I thought, this is another thing that I have to practice the principles in all my affairs. Much easier to just blow someone off and move on to the next one. But I need to deal with people like that. She can lie as much as she wants. You know, I need to learn to deal with people like that and accept them and even embrace them no matter what. And if you had told me in the beginning, guess what, Nancy P, you're gonna be able to get along with people that you dislike. You're gonna be able to do things that you don't want to do. You're gonna be able to do all of that with joy, not just do them and slog through, but with joy, I would have shot you then myself. It would have been a murder-suicide because I could not imagine having in my mind, it says in the book, you know, remember to be helpful is our only aim. That is my only aim. And I tell my sponsees that, you know, this is what I did. This is exactly what I did. I say, you know, how then shall we present that which has been so generously given to me? I was told exactly as it was presented to me. My sponsor was about as cuddly as a brick wall and as friendly as a grizzly bear. But she was an excellent, excellent sponsor. And she knew the book. And that's all that I cared about. And today, as she told me, you have to decide who you are and who you want to be. And remember, she told me this, if anybody's interested in this, don't ever compromise with a sponsee, because if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And it's not that they will do that, take advantage knowingly, but if I start to say to skimp and shortchange and, you know, the way that I know is right for me, then I have to do things over again. And, you know, a boss that I had a long, long time ago was a horrible, nasty, vicious guy, but he was an excellent administrator in the sense, not just a paper pusher. He ran at least 400 federal grants at once with all these scientists. And, you know, he's told me once, he said, rework is an administrator's worst enemy. And that's what I still think today. Rework of stuff that I already know what the answer is my worst enemy. So today I know who I am and I know who I'm not. And I tell my sponsees that, you know, and I'll tell anybody, you know, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a priest, a minister, or a rabbi. I'm not a retirement advisor. I'm none of those things. What I have is a way to harness the power of these steps that works for me as an agnostic. And boy, oh boy, does it work. If they want what I have, they're more than welcome to it. I never have ever called anybody up and said, sounds like you need a new sponsor. How about me? I don't do that. They come to me and I tell them what I know. And, you know, I don't really talk about food. I'm not really a food sponsor because I'm not a professional. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a doctor. And I help my sponsees figure out their alcoholic foods. And then I tell them to go to a doctor or a nutritionist or a dietitian or someone that does know and have them work out a food plan that works for them. I once sponsored a flight attendant. I mean, she needed definitely some specific instruction on how to manage her food with a job like that. She went to a professional. And there isn't a health plan on the planet, I don't think, that won't cover at least one visit. I don't know. But, you know, I don't get into the weeds with that. And that's part of the message that I carry. I know who I am and I know who I'm not. And I will often say to people, you know, especially the ones that have, I don't sponsor too many unicorns. I call them unicorns, people that have never heard of OA and are brand new. I mean, I've only sponsored one or two of those people. But, you know, most of the people that I sponsor have had some amount of experience working either in AA or whatever it is, they have some experience with the 12 steps, and I'll tell them, you know, you have to decide what you want. And this is, you know, if this is the way that they say to do it in the book, according to what I was taught. And my question to them is, how's it going doing it your way? Someone just called me the other day and who I didn't know and said that her sponsor advised her to give up these foods that I would be able to eat and many people might be able to eat. And instead of saying I'd get a new sponsor, which is what I thought I was going to say, instead I said, well, are you binging on those foods? And she said, yeah. I said, well, how's it going for you doing it your way? How about trying something new? And that's what they talk about, the ease with which we give up old ideas that don't work in favor of new ideas which do. This is how, you know, all these steps, you know, earlier in the book, prepare me to answer questions or to be compassionate and gentle and kind when someone calls me up instead of saying, look, this is how it's done. You want what I got, you do what I do. You know, that's what they used to say in the Boston area. You know, you want what I have, you do what I do. And so sponsors would dictate what I ate, how much, when, you know, I mean, I'm not like, I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, pretty much, you know, and I eat pretty much the same things that we all eat, fresh fruits and vegetables, lean meats and proteins, some sort of dairy maybe, you know, and tea. That's pretty much what I eat. And, you know, I don't really, there's not much question there for me. And even one time when I called my sponsor and I said, I don't know what to do about clementines. Oh, they're so little. And she said, either weigh them or don't eat them. And she hung up on me. And that's what I needed. I mean, I don't do that to my sponsees, but she knew me, man, and somehow she knew me, and she gave me exactly what I needed. And so anyway, so that's, you know, the 12 steps have the three parts. And so, you know, when I got through step 11 and I was ready for step 12, I realized that I had learned a lot, and I was ready to work the final step. I was ready to go through the final step. And, you know, okay, so I'm awake. It's tempting. The same way that it's tempting to think that once you put the food down, your problems are solved, because it feels so good not to be imprisoned with chains of fear and hiding, sneaking, cheating, lying, picking, licking, all that. It feels great. You feel like, wow, this is great. I could live like this all the time. But I don't and did not mistake abstinence for recovery. And it's tempting to do that, even if you're sponsoring. Even the jewel in the crown of the jewel in the crown is to practice these principles in all our affairs. So that means I have to be honest no matter what. And I was talking to a fellow the other day, and I realized, you know, when I got honest with my food, then a lot of other honesty was able to spring up like new grass. I didn't have to worry so much about was I going to be lying. I do have to still be very vigilant over that. And that's, you know, in 10, 11, and 12, I do a written 11-step inventory 365 days a year. I don't ever skip that unless I've been sedated because I'm in surgery or something, which unfortunately I've had a few surgeries. And, you know, the jewel in the crown, what they say is, wait a minute, I'm getting to the page here. The first sentence of the seventh chapter is, practical experience shows, that means proves, that nothing, one of Nancy P's five most important words in the whole book, will so much ensure immunity from drinking, and in our case eating, as what? Intensive work with other alcoholics. Not abstinence, not meetings. Intensive work, not casual, like every once in a while. That would mean like outreach calls. I do make a lot of outreach calls, but that's not what works the most. The most thing that keeps me, not just my food in place, but everything else, is intensive work with other people. It is an elixir. And I say this, I've said this on the line, my share today is going to be a compendium of all the things that I've, the little snippets that I've shared over the past 6.5 years. You know, intensive work with other alcoholics. That is an elixir. It has magical healing properties. My son is going to join the military, and he'll be 24 in September, and he's super smart. He speaks Chinese and Arabic and English, and he's a math whiz. And so he's kind of just what they're looking for a lot of different jobs. But I, of course, am petrified. And at first, when he first told me that, all I could say was, he said, I'm not sure, I think I am gonna. And I said, I'm sure you'll make the right decision. That was all that I could do. And as the weeks passed and we talked about, you know, his path and, you know, what was going on and how he had to approach that, I began to be very supportive. And I am supportive. But what I was ignoring was that I had this horrible, horrible fear that that he's not going to be okay. And I called my sponsor and I discussed it with her and I said, I have some fear. I don't know how to, that's how I start conversations with the two or three people that I truly trust, talk about really scary things. And, you know, we teased it out together and she shared with me something about her life that's scary and I felt better. And then I talked to another fellow and again, same thing. I felt better, and I will make those calls until I feel better, until I can metabolize this fear, metabolize meaning to sort of, you know, use it as fuel or somehow make it useful in my life or have it disappear, you know, burn through it so that it's no longer there. That's what working with others and talking to other people, sponsoring, that's what works for me. You know, people call me up with 10 steps all the time, and I will say that I don't really do 10 steps unless, what does it say in the 10th step? It says, the 10th step, this thought brings us to step 10. What are those? The promises from step 9, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue. We've entered the world of the spirit. Okay, good. No talking there. Our next function is to grow. Where? In understanding and effectiveness. Okay, good. I'm on board. This is not an overnight matter. Lucky for Nancy P, or else I'd be totally screwed. It should continue for a lifetime. Good. I'm on board. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Good. I'm on board. Still no talking. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Step 11 and step 6 and 7. Here's where the talking is. We discuss them with someone immediately. Step 5, and make amends quickly if, and as Pete B likes to say, and only if we've harmed anyone. And so usually I won't do a 10th step because, again, because the food is down, my honesty has had a chance to grow and thrive. I know what I've done. I know if I feel a little mental disquiet around my behavior, I know what it is. And the only time that I would call somebody up is to say, how do you think I should approach this? Should I call? Should I go visit? Should I write a letter? Should I just do a living amend? What is your opinion? Someone who I respect, usually my sponsor. And that's how I do, you know, or don't do 10 steps. You know, step 11 is sat through prayer and meditation. And I never pray or meditate, but I do prayerful and meditative things. You know, the idea of taking even 5 minutes of quiet time, never mind many of my friends take 30 minutes a day just sitting there. I would rather eat glass. I just can't do it. So what do? I do prayerful, meditative things. I work in my garden. I do laundry. And, you know, all these things provide an opportunity for me to practice the principles. I always use the example of my husband's shirts. When he takes off his leaves them inside out. And when I put them in the wash and I take them out in the dryer, they're inside out. And I used to be so frustrated. And I'd say, ugh. You know, I wish you wouldn't do this. And occasionally I'd say, you know, it would be helpful to me if you could turn them right side out. So that never worked either. So now when I do the laundry and I see one of his inside out shirts, I'm so glad because I spend the 5 seconds or 3 seconds that it takes to turn it right side out thinking about how much I love him and how great of a husband he is. And that is something that if you had told me that I was going to do stuff like that in the beginning, I would have laughed. In fact, today I feel like laughing the fact that I do this. And anyways, back to that first sentence. Nothing will so much ensure immunity. And those two words together are things that are particularly of interest to me. I am addicted to insurance. I love being insured. My home's insured. My cars are insured. My life is insured. All the stuff in my house, our house is insured, all that stuff. And every year, AAA sends me a thing. I pay my AAA bill, which is another form of insurance. And it says, you've been especially selected to buy this insurance. And I run over to my husband every year, like the swallows of Capistrano. I say, look, there's a good deal for more insurance. And he doesn't even break stride. He said, no, Every year he says this, and I say, but look, it's practically free. No, and every year I grumble, mumble, and I throw it away. And the fact is that I'm going to be okay no matter what. But here they're saying immunity, and people are especially, well, when the COVID first started, everybody would have sold their souls for immunity. But I would have sold my soul for immunity from compulsive overeating, and here they're telling me how to do it. Intensive work with other alcoholics. Like, it's not that tough. And you know, we all, like the bulimics, the anorexics, the garden variety, compulsive overeaters, the hopeless variety, we can all help each other. And in fact, that's what Bill says. We are uniquely positioned to do so. And you know, when we finished the 12th step, my sponsor said, okay, now you have to sponsor. I expect to hear you on the line tomorrow morning. And my response to that was, whoa. I have a way better idea. And she said, what's that? And I said, I think we should do it again like a cycle. And she laughed at me, the only time she ever laughed at all. I don't think maybe in her life, but she said, that's a terrible idea for me and for you. And the next day somebody called me up and told me that my sponsor had said that I was a cycle. And I said, well, I guess I am. And that's how I started sponsoring. And at first all I could do was read my notes out of the book. But gradually, with practice, this printed word became my own message, the same way that it becomes would become, you know, anybody else's message, your own message. And then I was able to see how, not the fact that I haven't eaten compulsively in all these years, and that I have done everything. I travel. We're going to Europe a week from today, as a matter of fact, for 3 weeks. And I don't mean to be cocky or arrogant, but I anticipate, since it will be my 8th trip to Europe since I recovered, I anticipate no problems with food at all. And because, you know, again, my lived experience is that this is not a program that is one to hold me back. I don't bring my food ever. Any last year, I brought a bunch of apples. My husband's been teasing me. Are we bringing apples? You know, they have apples in Europe. And I was like, oh, yes, but they don't have the kind that I like. But I'm not bringing any food this year. And, you know, I'm not bringing anything. Like, I don't usually bring anything. The only thing that I do in terms of when we travel is we read the menus before we go in. And if I can eat something, anything, I'll go. I don't care if I like it or not, because that's not the point. I go. Food is not an issue anymore. That is in the rearview mirror. And it's not only in the rearview mirror, it's around the corner and down the street. It's just not in sight anymore. But, you know, practicing the principles in all my affairs, whether I want to or not, means that I have to be kind and understanding and compassionate. And I just want to check my time here. I have this story that I feel like I've been dining out on a lot, and I want to say it again here. My neighbor, in the winter, we have parking restrictions on the street, so if it snows, so that they can plow. So my husband and I came home on a Saturday night, and to find my neighbor had parked her Range Rover on our yard because of the parking restrictions. And she has a bunch of cars. And my husband said, oh, looks like she parked there. And I said, yeah, it does. So he said, what should we do? I said, I'll go over there and tell her. And so I did. And I said, you have to move your car. It's parked on my garden. And she said, well, it's a Range Rover. And she said, well, I have a problem because the Jaguar and the BMW can't be moved. And I said, that's not my problem. Move your car. And she was really mad. And I said, I don't care. Move your car. It's on my lawn. And, you know, and so she moved it, and we haven't spoken since. So that was last December, you know, 7 months. And, you know, I was at first, I was like, can you believe it? Oh, I can't believe her. What a jerk. Ugh. You know, reveling in that feeling. And then the other day, I thought to myself, I'm sick of this. She actually sold us our house. She's a realtor, and she's nice. I mean, she's thoughtless, you know, like other people can be. So I decided that this year, in December, but not before, she gets Christmas cookies for me. I bake Christmas cookies every year, thousands of them. And I've never had so much as a chocolate chip, a Jimmy, or a sprinkle. That's an aside, but just to let anybody know, you can do whatever. If you're in fit spiritual condition, like they say, feel free to go if you can bring something to the situation, to the circumstance. So this year she's going to get one of my bags of cookies that have these little cute stickers that I put down from me to the neighbor, and they're in the shape of hearts. So it's going to be to Cynthia from Nancy. She can throw them away, she can give them away, whatever she wants, but she'll know that I'm ready to be friends again, if she wants to. She might still be really mad at my audacity of telling her to get off my lawn with her car. I don't know. But I feel like I'm practicing the principles. And I don't mistake the feeling that I had of being able to get through a day, then a week, then a month, and then a year without eating compulsively. I did not mistake that for recovery, because in all the years that I've been in the program, I've done things like that. Well, never a year, but if, you know, a couple of months, I'd be like, this is great. I've got this licked, you know, and then I have go out to dinner or be at a party at work or something and feel like, you know, I can do this somehow. Like today, I'm so hypervigilant over not so much my food as my thinking that I don't ever let that happen. I mean, if I ever feel, I don't really ever feel like I can, but if I ever feel like there's a lot of food around here, can you imagine eating some of it? Like in horror, even then I'll call somebody up, not to talk about, oh, I had a food thought. I don't do that. I believe that one of the reasons that working intensively with other people works so well is because that is not an opportunity to talk about myself. And that's my prescription. When someone calls me, they say, do you have a 10th step? And I say, can you take a 10th step? Sure. And they say, I resent my whoever because it affects my blah, 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 whatever it is. And I always say the same thing. I say exactly this. Sounds like you nailed it. I have nothing to add. Maybe I have something to add. Maybe. But usually I'll say, it sounds like you nailed it. But if it were me, if I were in your position, I would spend the next 45 minutes talking to other people and not talking about yourself. This is your one whiny phone call. Not that you're whining, you know, you're doing a 10th step, but it's the one opportunity that you have to talk about yourself. What do they say is our solution? Is to get out of self, to be helpful to other people. So not so much to talk about someone and talk to someone and say, is there anything I can do to help you? Although I do get calls like that and they're very cute, but, you know, I'm sort of not on that bandwidth, really. I'm more on the, you know, tell me what's going on with you. Tell me. You know, then they can talk about whatever they want, and then I'll talk, and then, and you know, before you know, 10, 15 minutes have gone by, and that's how I get rid of, or that's how I avoid, not avoid, but that's how I get through the feelings, because they come, you know, I'm human. I have all of the bedevilments that they say, but today, you know, my goal wasn't just to be helpful to other people. I mean, I still kind of feel sometimes, because I'm human, like, what a pain in the neck that is. What I really want, my goals in this program are five. I don't want to hurt myself with food. I don't hurt myself with food. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I am happy, joyous, and free. I want to help other people. I want to comprehend the word serenity, and I want to know peace. And that's the object of the game for me. I mean, the food part, I definitely don't want to hurt myself with food because the steps won't work if I am. You know, I mean, then I turn into either, you know, the controller, the one, you know, I call her the busy church lady, you know, the one that runs the rummage sale, is the director of the Sunday school, chooses the guest pastors, even picks the flowers in front of the pulpit, you know, all those, everybody can't stand her, but she's so useful and they don't have to do it that they just sort of let it ride. I don't want to be like that. And I've also been, you know, I'm going to meditate 12 hours, you know, every morning, you know, from like 50 hours a day, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to do all this stuff. I even made a spreadsheet once about all the tasks that I could do. Check, 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 check. You know, get on my knees, pray, weigh and measure my food, go to a meeting, talk to people, you know. But those somehow, they in the face of reality, they when they're written down like that and just check mark, it just doesn't work. I don't want to be like that either. What I want to be is helpful where I can be helpful. And where I can't be helpful, it's just as helpful to know that too. Like, I don't need to participate in this conversation. I don't need to add any opinion or experience to this conversation. Knowing that is really important as well. And, you know, today I'm not perfect at any of it by a long shot, but I rub along, as they say in England, I rub along fairly well with my fellows, both in and out of the program. And, you know, I have to say that, you know, my five goals, you know, my eternal circle, all these things that I say in, you know, that come from step 12, you know, it's not usually it's not so much like what I say on a phone call, it's that I made a phone call. I don't really care what I say or what I hear. I just know that I need to be talking to somebody else, that I won't be talking about myself, or, you know, I need to be listening. It's that I do these things. But the thing that makes it all work is the fact that, you know, again, I don't hurt myself with food. I'm happy, joyous, and free. I help other people. I comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. That's what makes it work. And then, you know, step 12 allows me to work the previous 11 steps, allows me to see that I'm powerless. I have one prayer. My one prayer is, I don't like this. I don't want things to be this way. And I said it about 100 times yesterday when I was crying over my son, who's not even, hasn't even joined up yet. And he, you know, like something might happen. He's not going, he might not. But, I mean, you know, I'm already seeing him dead on some battlefield somewhere, of course, because what else would I do? That's who I am. And, you know, I had to say, I don't want him to do that. I don't want him. He's got a great job. He lives in Chicago, and he's everything is great. He makes good money. He's on his way. I want him to do that. He hates sitting at a desk. He hates it. Okay, that's not up to me. I don't get to decide, you know. I don't like this. I don't want things to be this way, but too bad, Nancy P. Tough toenails. He gets to do what he wants. And I have to, my job is to tell him what is the truth, which is that I'm sure he'll make the right decision. That's what I said. And so that's how come I know. You know, I'm super vigilant over this stuff. I do my written 11-step inventory every single night to make sure, and I'm honest. And I think about it. Were we afraid? Yes, usually yes, I'm afraid, usually, because I'm an afraid person. But, you know, overall, my life today is filled with joy and light. And you know, I didn't have a white light experience. I had something way better, which is that I live in light. It wasn't like a kaboom thing, like, you know, I won't horrify you by trying to sing opera. Usually I do. My sponsees, oh, that's me singing opera. You know, it wasn't like that. It was a slog sometimes when my daughter was sick and broken, and I didn't want a broken daughter. I wanted one that worked. She was handicapped and needy, and you know, she had far deeper problems than, you know, the unsavory boy who's not college bound hanging around her, you know? Like, she was just really broken, and I didn't want that daughter. I wanted a fixed one. And, you know, I'm not even ashamed of those feelings, really. I see them, I see myself feeling those feelings today with compassion, that I was out of my depth, and nobody wants a sick, nobody wants to live with you know, someone who's that needy, but sometimes we have to. And these steps allowed me to get through that time where I had to visit her every night in a every single night, and I didn't need so much as an extra grain of rice, not one bite, you know. And in the joy of, you know, her graduating from college, coming down, you know, she went to a small college, so they read every name, and she came down, and the light in her face, I was so proud of her. And she's, you know, now she's out swimming, I don't know, you know, hopefully not with any sharks or anything. It's like she picks these things to do, I don't know, you know, and I have no control over that either. You know, and that's practicing the principles in all my affairs and telling her how great she is, and supporting her, you know, and, you know, and putting the brakes on when, you know, when it's appropriate, you know, like shutting off the spigots of money. Once she graduated, she doesn't get, we don't support her anymore. You know, we don't buy everything that she needs anymore. And, you know, that was, you know, she's kind of was like taken aback when we did that. Well, too bad. Tough toenails for her. You know, we all have to grow up sometime. And today I can do that and know that it's the right thing and not just cave and say, okay, I'm going to do everything for everybody. I know who I am and I know who I'm not today with my family, with my friends, with my sponsees, with my fellows. You really can't get, I mean, for me, my money, I really can't get anything better than that. And abstinence is where it starts, not where it ends. And if I make the mistake of thinking, you know, all I have to do is buy the broccoli, that is, for me, that has never been the case. I buy plenty of broccoli. And I would still say, I'm buying the broccoli, why am I still so angry? Today I'm not angry. I don't live that way. I get angry sometimes, but I can't stand it. I used to revel in it. Today, I hate being angry. I hate being restless and irritable and discontent, looking for a fight, you know, somehow to let out the steam. I don't want to do that anymore. What I want is, you know, what it says in the book, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. I used to think, speak for yourself. I'm fine. I don't want that. Why would I want to hang around with a bunch of fat people that dress bad? Then I looked in the mirror and I thought, I need something different from what I'm getting. And today, you know, the closeness that I feel with my fellows, you know, some of my friends, you know, my particular friends, is priceless. And anybody that calls me, I make sure that I, you know, some people will call and they'll say, hi, this is my first phone call. I was afraid. And I'm like, I'm so glad you picked me. Tell me about yourself. I say that. I make sure that they feel welcome and tell them that I understand. You know, I do. Even the people whose disease does not manifest itself the way that mine does, people that starve themselves or purge or you know, whatever they do that's a little different from me, I'd say we can understand each other. And we, you know, I'm here to help you. Call me anytime for any reason. Even with sponsees that decide they don't want me. They'll tell me, I don't want to work with you anymore. I say, no problem. Feel free to call me. Best of luck. Feel free to call me anytime for any reason. And I mark my book with tape flags to know, you know, which ones I'm talking to and where we are. I take their tape flag out and I throw it away. And then I forget who they are. You know, if they want to call me, I'm more than happy to talk. You know, but I'd never forget who I am and what I am and I don't forget who I'm not and what I'm not. And I only can share with people what happened to me. Other people have different experiences. We hear them every week on this line. They have different ways. But I'll tell you, I never could have imagined how big my life was going to get with recovery. I was talking to a friend on the phone yesterday and she said, you know, she's traveling with her family and her husband and her little girl went out with the other one that lives far away. And she said, it feels good to have time to myself. And I said, yeah, that's great. I said, is there anything you can do to be helpful? She said, yeah. She said, yeah, I'm going to tidy up and I'm going to do this and that. And she said, I'm even going to do whatever it was. And she said, usually my husband would do that, but I decided I could figure out how to do it myself. And I said, you know, that's great. That's fantastic. She said, I'm amazed that I have so much time. And I said, yeah, you know, when you stop thinking about food, plotting, planning, scheming, hiding, sneaking, cheating, and lying, all of a sudden, you know, I talk about it like it's a purse that was as big as a car and was filled with junk and crap. And once you take all that stuff out, you know, in the form of cheating, sneaking, hiding, and lying, and conniving and all that, then all that's left is your cell phone, your wallet, your sunglasses, and your keys. And, you know, you still have this huge purse that's filled with space. And that's where, you know, helping, being helpful to other people and spiritual serenity, you know, all that, that's what rushes in to fill the void. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't? And I'm going to close by saying that, you know, today my life, even when it's a slog, is filled with joy. It's filled with it. I mean, there may be other people, I'm sure, not maybe, there definitely are other people whose recovery is way better than mine, who are more articulate than me, but nobody is happier than I am. And you can take that to the bank. And with that, I'll pass.
Nancy, thank you so much for your straightforward share this morning, no-nonsense approach. We're so appreciative of all that you do. So we're going to make a transition to questions and answers. So get ready in a moment. We're going to take some names if you have questions for Nancy to post to Nancy. Prior to that, just a couple of things. One, let me, for the first time, give the share ID for this presentation this morning. I'll give that again a little bit later, but I'm going to give it now. That share ID number is 21,531. That's 21531. And also to mention, before we take some names here for questions, we're going to ask Nancy for her contact information following the recorded portion of this meeting. So stay tuned for that. And if you don't get a question in, you could or want to speak to her privately, you'll be able to do that. So with all that said, if you have a question, questions only, please, in the interest of time and out of respect for the format, give me your first name and last initial. Who has questions for Nancy?
Savoria.
Anita J.
Anita.
Anayeta R.
Anayeta.
Devori F.
Devora.
Devori.
Devori. Okay. Devori. I heard Anita, Hanayeta, Devori.
Lauren Grace B.
Lauren Grace.
Sue Q.
Sue Q. Who else? Or we can get you on the second go around here. Okay, so I heard Anita, Hanayeta, Devori, Lauren Grace, and Sue. Just remind us of your first initial when you come on and where you're calling from. Let's start, if you're not Anita, please mute your phone, and let's start with a question from Anita. Anita, good morning.
Good morning to you, Larry. Thanks for leading this, and Nancy P., was wonderful to hear you. I never can listen live, maybe 3 times a year, and here you are. My question to you is, 29 years in the program, you didn't know you would finally hear something that would get your attention. What made you stay 29 years?
That's an excellent question. Thank you, Anita J. You know, that's an excellent question. I mean, where else was I going to go? I mean, I came in when I was 11 because my mother was in OA and all her dumb OA friends thought their kids could use it, you know, but maybe that's probably true. I mean, I guess at least I am still in the program. I don't know about the other ones. But, you know, in the course of going to meetings, I also went to a couple of pay and ways. You know, I went to Weight Watchers and Diet Workshop each twice. Didn't work while I was going to OA. I mean, I tried when I was in college. One of the girls said there was some diet that worked. And so I did that. You know, I mean, I did things. But, you know, I always went back to OA. I mean, where else was I going to go? I also tried, I mean, I wouldn't say I ever took a real vacation. I didn't go to too many meetings when I was in college while I was on campus. But, and back then there were no meetings on campus. They were all off campus. But, you know, I mean, there really wasn't any place to go. And then, of course, when I graduated, back then it was only 185 pounds. You know, I was back home with my mother, and she was like, you know, she whipped me right into shape. And then I was, you know, I hate this word, I was abstinent with nothing else. And, you know, thought life was great. You know, but she weighed and measured all my food, made my breakfast, put it down in front of me, packed my lunch, and served me dinner. Like, I had no challenges. I lived in her house, you know, like that. And you know, there was no place else for me to go. It was only when I was sobbing in my car over my afternoon box of donuts and I called my friend who told me about A Vision for You. How did I know it was going to work? You know, I mean, the answer was I didn't, right? Here are some of the methods we tried. My methods were more meetings, fewer meetings, different meetings. Eat this, don't eat that. Eat that, don't eat this. Eat sugar, don't eat sugar. Weigh and measure, don't weigh and measure. All those things within OA plus all the other things. Nothing ever worked. And you know, I got the number from my friend. You know, she went on and on, and I said, give me the website. And she said, no, that's what saved my life. She said, write the number down. If I'd had only the website, I wouldn't have done it. But I wrote the number down. I threw it in my sticky bag with my sticky donuts, and I pulled it out November 30th of 2017. And I smoothed it out of my counter, and I thought, this is just another thing. What does this even mean? And the only reason that I called in was because I had a doctor's appointment instead of having to go right to work. So I was home a little later before I went to the doctor. And they were on the doctor's opinion, just like my friend said. And I heard everybody talk. Nobody was talking about, you know, my sponsor used to call it dead cats. They'd be up there and they'd say, hey, I just have to dump this here. My cat died, or, you know, my husband lost his job, or any of that stuff. They were talking about the steps and how the steps worked. And I was paying attention. And I have never had to hurt myself with food since that day. Not to say about abstinence, but the desire to eat compulsively was removed. And then all the real work started. You know, how else can I explain from one day binging my brains out in my car, sobbing over donuts. And the next day, and for the next 6 years and 7 months, basically, never doing that, ever. Like, ever. Like, I don't know what kept me going. I don't care either. All I found my Birkenstock, and it's well broken in, if you'll forgive the expression. So, hope that helps.
Thanks for the question, Anita. Okay, next up with the question is Hanayeta, followed by Devori. Hanayeta?
Thank you, Larry. Sorry, this is Hanayeta R. from Texas. Thank you so much for your very insightful share, and just it really a lot of so much hit me. But there was one thing that really you were talking about. Oh my gosh, my mind is so bad. Let me. I just said it to myself. You're about making amends, and you're talking about living amends. And I wanted to know how you do a living amends. And before you do, I just want to tell everybody I am finally home after a month in the hospital and yesterday, and I was doing well, and I'd love phone calls. Thanks.
How I do a living amend is no fanfare. No, you know, I stop doing whatever it was that I was doing. And I try to do the thing that I need to be doing, to be considerate, to be, if I'm inconsiderate, to be considerate. If I'm rude, to not be rude. And, you know, the best example of that was, it's not so much a living amend as acknowledgement that it's working. I was in my dining room where I am now. We have a very long dining room table. It's like 10 feet long. And I was walking up and down the table talking to my husband who hasn't quite finished his dinner, and I was raving about how great I felt, and then I turn around really fast and I said, "Have you noticed?" Just like that. And he waits for 10 seconds. My husband is not quick to speech. He's an engineer, and he doesn't like to say anything unless he knows it's the truth. And then he nodded. And he may have said yes, but I'm not even sure that he did that. But I felt as though he had said, "Honey," which he's never called me in his life, "you are amazing. I'm so glad I married you. Thank goodness. Let's go buy you something expensive," which he's also never said. but I felt like I had won the lottery. Like my husband, who's, you know, everybody loves him. Nobody ever says that he's a jerk or that he's rude or awful. He is my muse in some ways. You know, occasionally, you know, I seek counsel from others. Most often him first, and then I have my sponsor and my other special buddy that I call often to get, you know, insight where my own thinking can't be trusted. But I seek counsel from him, and for him to sort of acknowledge, you know, my light. I don't want to say success, and I don't want to say anything, but just for him to acknowledge that. And other small things that he has said that, you know, just changes. I don't need any fanfare. I don't need anyone to say, "Notice that you're, you know, I don't know, showing up on time finally," or, you know, more. You know, I don't need anyone to say that. What I need to do is be on time. What I need to do is X, Y, or Z. And, you know, I don't need to make an announcement. I'm going to stop doing that. The only time I did that is when, not an acknowledgement, when my daughter, we were in Boston on a happy errand, and she had stopped self-harming 2 years prior about, but I was living like still in the space where if she was 5 minutes late coming down to dinner, I thought she was in her room hanging herself, or, you know, I still was very afraid of all that. And that, I can tell you, was a terrible way to live. And she said, "I'm so glad we're here together." And I said, "I am too. It's fun to have a girl's day." And then she said, "I want to do this." Or I think she wanted to do something or go somewhere. And I said, "Well, let me think about it." She said, "Well, what do you have to think about?" And I said, "Well, I don't know if I'm comfortable." She said, "Well, why aren't you comfortable?" And in my mind, in one nanosecond, I said, "Yeah, Nancy, why aren't you comfortable?" And then in the next nanosecond, I thought, she deserves better and you deserve better. And so out loud, I said to her, I said, you know what? I said, you're right. I said, I'm going to commit to you right now that I'm not going to be nervous and I'm not going to be afraid anymore around you. And if you think that I'm going to do that, if I'm acting that way, please tell me so that I can nip it in the bud and then we can both get on with things. And from that moment on, I haven't been afraid for her, for that of that kind of thing. I mean, you know, she's scuba diving. She could, you know, her air could run out. I mean, a shark could come, like all those things. But, you know, like I'm not afraid that she's going to hack herself up and die bleeding, you know, in her room. I'm not afraid of that anymore. And that's a living amend that, you know, I treat her the way that I would want to be treated. I expect from her what I expect from myself, you know, to be kind, to be generous, to be sensitive, to be helpful. Oh, that's what I mean by that. That's a living amend. Usually I don't say anything. I just stop what I think I'm doing wrong or start doing things that I haven't been doing.
Thanks for the question, Hanietta. Okay, next up we have Devori, followed by Lauren Grace. Devori, what's the last initial of your first name?
Thank you. It's Devori S. Thank you for your share. My question was, how did you transition or have the change from thinking about recovery, not confusing abstinence with recovery, not so much focusing on the, you know, what kept you in the rooms for so long, but how did you make the transition from being in OA for all those years to what jump-started you into the recovery? And how did you make that change?
One word, three times, surrender, surrender, surrender. I mean, you know, it's not so much, you know, I spoke about 12th step, and the 12th step says having had a spiritual awakening. That's the first part. But the implied question for me has always been, okay, good for me. I've had the spiritual awakening. How am I going to stay awake? Well, they tell you in the next two parts of it, practice the principles, and carry the message and practice the principles. That's how you stay awake. Well, how do you awaken? How do you get awake? Surrender. I mean, as long as I thought I could do it myself, as long as I thought I could, you know, I'm smart, I'm articulate, you know, I have a good education, I am capable, I can do a lot of things. Well, how's it going for you, Nancy P? Doing it your way. That's why I ask I have a lot of smart, you know, MDs. I've sponsored MDs and PhDs and, you know, lawyers and, you know, teachers and, you know, people that have good, difficult, you know, occupations that are obviously not stupid people. As a species, compulsive overeaters of the hopeless variety are not dumb. You know, we're all pretty bright. And we are so bright, we ate our way up to whatever weight we got to or starved ourselves down to whatever weight we got to. I mean, as long as I thought I could do it a different way from what it said in the book, I got nothing, right? Half measures and lurking notions were the scourge of my existence, you know, especially the lurking notion. I love the word lurking, you know, like it's like hiding in wait to do harm. You know, every time, you know, that's why to me, they talk about the four terrible horsemen in the book of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. That's not the four terrible horsemen. That's easy. Those are easy. My four terrible horsemen for Nancy P are fake it till you make it, act as if, borrow mine, and use the group. I had to get my own, I had to harness the power. Like I said, I had to figure out a way to harness the power of this, of these steps in a way that was going to work for me. And as an agnostic, you know, I don't want God. What I want is relief. And nothing earthly got me there. I mean, you know, we're not wealthy, but if I had told my husband that I needed to go away to an expensive, you know, treatment center for a month or two or however long, he would have, you know, figured out a way. We would have figured out a way. You know, anything that I needed to buy, anything like that, he's been 1,000% supportive, 1,000,000%. But that never worked. So, you know, like I say, when I was broken, bruised, bleeding, and busted, you know, that's when I was ready to say, I threw up my hands and I said, I don't know, and please tell me. Not just I don't know, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. I was incapable of fighting at that point. And that's why, you know, my surrender came in two parts. on page 8 of Bill's story, it says, "No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master." That was significant for me because at that point, I stopped. I stopped eating. I stopped crying. I stopped thinking. I stopped arguing. I stopped crying. Okay, I'm stopped. I'm like a petrified animal that's been abused and abandoned. You know, you know they can't really do much except stand there and look around. And then the second part of my surrender was, you know, our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And I don't care about God or anything, but my ideas weren't working. That's the bottom line. How's it going for you? Doing it your way, Nancy P. And so the transition happened before anything else. You know, it happened, you know, at the point of surrender, then all of the steps instantly worked. How else can I explain from one day to the next, eating, binging my brains out on, you know, whatever, usually for me, Dunkin' Donuts and that sort of thing, sweets like that, to the next, and never having had any sugar ever from then till now. From one day to the next, how can I explain it? The desire to eat compulsively was removed. And I never have had a moment's doubt, ever, ever, ever. I've made a couple of inadvertent mistakes. One time I went out with my daughter for sushi. I did not realize that sushi rice around maki and sushi has sugar in it with vinegar for flavor. I did not realize that until, you know, one time I did it and I began to feel afraid. And I thought, I know it's not because, you know, I hadn't done anything. Couldn't find a reason. I was still going through the steps, and I told her what happened. She said, "Oh, yeah, I don't eat sushi myself, but I've heard they put sugar in the rice to make it stickier." And all I said was, "Oh, I guess I won't eat sushi anymore." But that was the same as someone else saying, "I don't write with my left hand, so I might as well cut it off." I mean, I loved sushi, and I don't eat it anymore. I don't find it revolting or anything, but it I don't even see it anymore. I don't even see it. It's like, you know, if it's sometimes people have it at parties or whatever. I never order it. I never go. I don't care. It's like it doesn't exist for me. The problem, that particular food problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for me anymore. You know, that's what happens, right? As long as we remain in fit spiritual condition. And so if I stop doing the things that I do, if I stop sponsoring, if I stop making phone calls, if I stop, you know, thinking about, you know, being vigilant, any of that stuff, if I let up on that for, you know, my sponsor used to say within hours. I figure probably 15 or 20 minutes. I'd probably be like, you know what? I've had enough of this OA stuff. I'd already be looking for my keys to go to the donut shop if I thought that, you know. And so I spend quite a bit of time on my, I don't, you know, on my vigilance, I guess. And somehow I still have time to live a very, very, very full life. I mean, it doesn't actually take time. Counterintuitively, it makes time. So I hope that helps.
Thanks, Sonny, Dvori. Next up, we have Lauren Grace B, followed by Sue Q. Lauren Grace, it's your turn.
Hi, this is Lauren Grace B, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. Thank you so much, Nancy. I really got so much from your presentation. The question I have today is, when you pick up a sponsee, sometimes they have food plans from a nutritionist or doctor, sometimes they don't. And sometimes I have trouble knowing what to do with them for their food plan. You know, I know they have to go to a nutritionist, but what do you do with people in the meantime? And if they're dragging their feet getting to a nutritionist, how do you deal with that?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I always, you know, if they already have a food plan that they've gone over with a doctor, I say, tell me what you eat. And the only discussion that I have with food is to help them figure out what their alcoholic foods are. Because if they've come to me, I mean, if they're in Overeaters Anonymous, in the Vision for You, and they've asked for a sponsor, they're pretty much at the end of the road. As they say, it's the last house on the block. My particular house also has guys with guns on the porch, dirty needles in the yard, and prostitutes hanging out the windows, like a place that you just really don't want to go. So if they're with me, then they know that they're going to have to listen. And so I'll say, you know, tell me about your food plan, you know, and they'll say what it is. And I'll say, and how are you finding it? You know, well, I'm still eating. And if I, you know, they have to go through the same exercise that everybody else goes through with me. I say, write down your alcoholic foods. you know, or all the food that you eat in red light, green light, you know, like things that you know you'll never binge on, things that you know you'll definitely binge on, and things that maybe sometimes you binge on. And then they do that. And then I point out, you know, things that I see, flaws in there. I don't want to say flaws, but areas that could be stumbling blocks based on my own experience. And if they're focused too much on the food, then I tell them that I'm really not the right sponsor for them, because to me it's a black and white issue. I had this one sponsee for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and she said that she was allergic to nuts. And I said, I understand that. I'm allergic to nuts. That means no nuts, no nut butters, no nut flours, no nuts, no nut extracts, no nuts. And she said, okay, but I'm going to eat pesto. And I said, well, I don't really think that's a good idea, because you already said you're allergic to nuts. She said, well, it's never been a problem for me. And inside my head, I said, be patient. And I said, well, let's see how it goes. And sure enough, she, like Jim, picked up a half a dozen times in quick succession. And I said, finally, I said, I think I'm going to have to give up the pesto. And she said, well, I don't want to do that. And I said, well, it has nuts in it. You know, again, the whole same conversation. And she said, well, I'm not going to give it up. I said, then I don't think this is going to work. And she said, you're dumping me? I said, I'm not dumping you. I said, I have one thing for sale in my store. It's called Nancy P's Experience, Strength, and Hope. That's also the name of the store. So there's one store, one thing for sale in it, and it's all the same flavor. And you don't want it. So you should go find someone who has something different. But it's not going to be me. And that was it. She was so angry because she felt that I should put up with that nonsense forever. And that's also, my sponsor told me, don't compromise. I should have cut her off right then, but, you know, I was like, try to practice the principles, be patient. You know, I mean, this is a deadly disease, and people that don't want to face up to things, that's fine, but I made a living not facing up to things, metaphorically speaking, and I don't do that anymore. I know what's what, and my food is never an issue. Like, that I know. Like those things, that problem has been resolved. That doesn't bother me anymore. You know, I had a mole removed from my back. That mole is now moldering away in some medical waste dump somewhere. It's never going to come back and get me. That's not true with food, but I feel like it is because I work my buns off to make sure that I don't forget. How do I do that? You know, by staying in fit spiritual condition. How do I do that? Stay awake. How do I do that? Surrender. It's like, this is what I mean by this eternal circle that the 12th step knits together so that I don't ever forget that. And all I have, like, my experience, strength, and hope is not helpful to everybody, to all people at all times. That's why we have, you know, different sponsees and different sponsors and all that. So, like, I don't give that stuff a whole lot of airtime. And if I feel like I have a very sensitive BS detector, and if I think, if I smell anything, like we all know what like hiding around food is. So we all have the same detector. It's just a question of making sure that it's like polished up and can receive, you know, any kind of waves, sound waves or thought waves from other people. If I smell any kind of hiding, sneaking, cheating, and lying in thinking or in action, I confront it. And if they, you know, I don't say, oh, I think you're thinking that this isn't going to, you know, I will say it out loud and ask them how they feel and what they think. And if they still want to do it their way, I'm like, I can't work like that. You know, I know who I am and who I'm not. Hope that helps. And anybody can call me, of course, anytime to talk more about it offline.
Thanks so much, Lauren Grace. Okay, next up we have Sue Q. Sue, good morning to you.
Good morning, and thank you so much, both of you, for your courageous shares. I just wondered, I'm a little nervous, so bear with me. You said, I thought I heard you say you're agnostic, and I just wondered how you would describe your higher power or how that, how does that work for you in this program? And the other quick question is, you mentioned loneliness, and what page was that on? If it's in the big book, I'd appreciate that too. But thank you so much, both of you.
Sure. Okay, the easiest thing first is the loneliness, have loneliness disappear. That is on page, the first page of the seventh chapter, which is page... Page 89. It's in the second paragraph. And then my agnosticism is the reason that I recovered, because, like I said, I had tried, that's why I said the four terrible horsemen are act as if, fake it till you make it, borrow mine, and use the group. I needed something, as my sponsor said, you've got to figure out what you want God to be and what you want God to do for you. And the first thing that I thought was, you know, well, I thought to myself a day or two later, I'm going to take that challenge. What do I want? What do I want? And I thought about it. And I won't go into the whole exercise, but I was driving on California Street in West Newton, where I live, and I was driving past friends of ours, Rick and Sabrina Halloran, and I thought, you know, what do I want? And by the time I got to the stop sign at the end of the street, I was done. I mean, it was not an academic exercise. It wasn't like I had to think about it, write it all down. Some people say that they write a want ad for God or something. I don't do that. I needed to know what I could not just live with, but I needed to be able to embrace it. I needed to be able to hold this concept close. And I came up with something that worked for me. And the first thing that I said is, the first thing that I don't want is God. I don't like the word, and it doesn't feel comfortable or connected or anything. It just makes me feel like I'm wearing an itchy sweater and a pair of shoes that's a half a size too small. And the second thing was no knees, because I wasn't raised that way, and I don't need to see the dust bunnies under my bed or smell my musty carpets. And then I thought about what I did want, you know, trust, compassion, friendliness, kindness, lovingness, generosity, empathy, sympathy, patience, dependability, integrity. Like, you know, no religion ever says murder, rape, and pillage, and steal, cheat, and hide, and lie. They all say to be good and kind and compassionate and gentle and all the things that I wanted. And the second thing, what do I want it to do for me? Make me into those things. And thus was my cornerstone set in place, and no later vicissitude has shaken it. So I don't really think about God, you know, like, the whole idea of that, just, you know, I'm finally out of the closet, you know, like people that, you know, they want to live different lifestyles, and they try to pretend for years and years, and they're miserable. And then they say who they really are, and they're happy as clams. And that's kind of what happened to me. I was like, not only was I much happier and more relaxed, but I was able to actually recover. Like, I hadn't been eating, and that, like, I hadn't been eating compulsively, and I luckily, providentially, I did not mistake that for being recovered, because that had happened to me before, and I always picked up. So I was working with this sponsor 3 times a week for 30 minutes, and our conversations were not chatty. Hi, how are you? Fine. Where were we? And then we'd read, and she would talk, and that was it. But I did whatever she told me immediately and as hard as I could, and gradually, you know, and actually not even pretty fast, but not immediately, you know, within the next week or two or three, maybe a month at the outside, that feeling, that designation that I had given, I call it the thing that takes care of me, or just this feeling, this sweet spot, it began to take root and grow. And has never, you know, like my son's situation, which hasn't even started yet, is a source of fear. I'm his mother. Of course, I'm his mother. And, you know, I want him to be happy, and I want him to live right next door to me and always be there at any minute so that I can be there to help him. But Bill and Mary Margaret live right next door to me, and they're really nice. And, you know, and I'm not going to get that ever. He's never coming home to live with me again, nor do I want him to. What do I want, a 40-year-old living in my basement? Ugh, yuck. And you know, that's never going to happen. So, you know, like I said this before, I don't really care about God. And I will say this, as an agnostic, if there is one, I don't care. But if there is one, I guarantee that it's absolutely fine with it, that it doesn't care either. You know, I get everything that I need no matter what I believe. And so can anybody else, as long as you believe something, I think. I think. You know, when I didn't believe anything, or just, you know, wanted to eat, or, you know, was eating, or just wanted to, I got nothing. But I don't, this thing has become actually a working part of my mind. It's become a piece of my brain that wasn't there before and now is. And that has unlocked everything. You know, my mind went from being a dingy, damp, spider and rat infested cellar into a day spa. You know, like, it's like light and bright and white. And, you know, I'm getting, you know, the equivalent of a you know, a mani and a pedi all at once, all day, every day. It's like the best thing ever. And even when things are terrible, like even when I had to go to a, you know, a locked mental ward to visit my daughter, I was joyful and grateful. Even then, even if the, like they can coexist in the same space, complete despair and fear and pain and joy and light. It's the same, they're in the same space at the same time. So that's kind of how I roll with it. And I don't, you know, I don't worship anything. I don't need to. I have what I have, you know, and what do I have? I'm happy, joyous, and free. I don't hurt myself with food. I help other people. I comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. I mean, maybe there's more, but I'm pretty okay with what I have. Like I always say, I'm willing to change my conception. I'll reach, but I'm not going to throw my back out because why would I? I've got everything I need. You know, I don't need to live in a 50-room mansion when I have a lovely home just right where I am. I don't know if that helps.
Well, it certainly helped me. Thanks, Nancy. And that's we're gonna call that a wrap because it's too close to the top of the hour here. So we're gonna wrap up. And however, if you hang on, we're gonna ask Nancy for her contact information. So if there's a question that's kind of lingering for you, I'm sure if you reach out to Nancy, she'll be able to get back to you at an appropriate time. So with that, Nancy, thank you so much for your generosity this morning. It was really terrific. We appreciate you. So now we're going to close with our reading from page 164 in a chapter we identify with, which is called A Vision for You. And then we will stop the recording. Okay, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.